Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for February 16th, 2009, and on this week's episode, we have an interview with Michael Halberstam and Brett Nevue for Writers Theater's Old Glory. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, and let's talk theater.
This is the Talk Theater Interview Podcast, and I'm your host this week, Ann Nicholson Weber. Today, we're going to be talking about the Literary Development Initiative at Writers Theater, and here to join me in that conversation are Brett Nevue, who is a playwright whose world premiere, Old Glory, opened last night at Writers and was developed through the Literary Development Initiative, and also Michael Halberstam, who is the Artistic Director at Writers. Welcome to you both.
Thank you, Ann.
Hello.
Michael, could you just describe for us the how the Literary Development Initiative began and what it aims to do?
Well, Writers Theatre has been in existence now for about 17 years, and it seemed to me as we were a Writers Theatre, we really should be supporting living writers a lot more aggressively than we were. On the other hand, I think that an organization needs to achieve a certain level of sophistication in order to support the new writing process. You can put commissions out, but if you can't actually support the writer by giving them the tools they need in order to bring their piece to life, then there's not much use in the commission. So we waited until I felt that we had the adequate support in our organization to actually more aggressively begin commissioning, although it should be said that we had done a number of commissions for adaptations in the early days of the company. In 2003, when we moved into our new theater at Tudor Court, we had a donor who was interested in helping support the organization but wanted something specific and tangible to support, and I thought this would be the perfect opportunity to launch the Literary Development Initiative. So we went to David and Mary Green, who gave us a very, very generous gift in order to launch this program, which enabled me to bring on an artistic associate and to start relationships and interactions with new playwrights, bring playwrights into the organization to start the interview to begin a commission process. Around the same time, Richard Christensen, who has been a very, very good friend to Writers Theatre, introduced me to Brett Nevue. Richard's a big fan of your work and I think a good friend.
Yes.
I reached out. I think I got your email from Richard and then invited you to breakfast.
Yes. And we talked about the initiative.
At that point in time, we'd also had another donor who'd been interested in supporting a mystery. They thought that mystery writing was something that wasn't being taken very seriously. And so I talked to Brett. I thought this would be a great project to bring to Brett. I'd just seen Shade Murray direct a piece you did over at the Straw Dog, the Radio Hour.
Radio Plays, yes.
Radio Plays was fantastic. And I thought, okay, this is a voice that I think we could harness into this program. On the other hand, when you give a playwright a commission, it seems to me that you also want to attach to one of the many things that I'd learned through the process of touring around the country and also meeting with people in London, like Dominic Cook, who was head of literary development for the Royal Shakespeare Company, was that you really need to commission your playwright without a lot of strings.
Right.
So I came to meet with Brett with an idea, but gave him the notion that he was not to be felt tied by the idea, and that in fact to allow his idea to grow from his own passion would actually be the best arrangement for both of us.
Mm-hmm. And that's what happened. Michael had given me some material, and we talked about mysteries and things like that. And I had an idea of something that I didn't share at that moment, I don't think, because it was still sort of percolating. And I was working on a trilogy. I think I was still working on the second part of a trilogy about the war on terrorism. And the next time we got back together, I proposed the third part of the trilogy to Michael as the play that we would maybe work on together, and gave him some material, some things that had inspired the play. And we talked about the mystery quotient in it. And he said, "Sounds good. Why don't you go knock out a first draft.
I remember one of the fun parts of one of the many fun parts of our dialogues. I think we had about three or four breakfasts to get the notion rolling. Was you one of the things I think is so stunning about your writing is the way you embrace ambiguity, mm-hmm. and you said that you would usually initiate a commission process. The theater company coming and saying, yes, we love your ambiguity. That's what we really want to harness. Then you'll turn in the play and you get, this is a little ambiguous. Can you make this more specific? So, not that kind of ambiguity. One of the lovely things about this, again, to get that guide from the playwright right off the bat, which was to say, if you're really going to embrace this and you really want to help nurture this process, I want you to take the full package and encourage that.
Yeah. And that's the best way to work is, I think that if a theater is going to commission a writer, they have to know the writer that they're commissioning. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, I don't know if they do. They know of the writer or they know of the theaters the writer's worked with.
They know the buzz.
Right.
Not the work.
And so then they get the play after the commission and it's, out there or something. Mm-hmm. And they don't exactly know what to do with it. And I don't think that – certainly not the case with writers and not always the case with commissions, but it can happen maybe about half the time.
Well, one of the things that interested me about doing this interview is to talk about commissioning because mm-hmm. it seems to me a very fraught with process. Essentially, it's a pig and a poke. And for instance, Brett, you just said, if a theater isn't familiar with the work of the writer they're commissioning, they're going to be surprised. But ideally, a writer might surprise you anyway. You don't want to be stuck.
Well, that's the thing, and it's a theater's allowance for risk. If a theater's actually genuinely interested in risk, then they should take the play that the writer wrote them, that they paid them to write, the writer that they specifically chose, mm-hmm. and begin developing that play. And a lot of times, it is handing the play to the theater and them being surprised by the risk the writer took in writing something, mm-hmm. maybe a little different or maybe something that would challenge them. They're hoping sometimes, and again, this is not all theaters, they're hoping for something that will fill a slot for them as opposed to make them have to figure out a way to produce it. Mm-hmm. And also give the time it takes to develop it. Which isn't always the case because a lot of theaters aren't ready for that, like Michael said, that you have to be very open. And that's one thing about writers, it's incredibly collaborative and very, very open to the process of creating plays. And I think that's why the shows here are always so wonderful, is that there's an air of freedom about this place that a writer or any artist comes in and they can sense. And that's also not always the case. Usually there's apprehension with mm-hmm. new work from the board, from the artistic director, from all sorts of folks. And it's a thing you have to fight against as opposed to embrace. And I feel like writers embraces that.
Yes. I mean, I won't say that there wasn't apprehension and there isn't apprehension with the process. And I'm terrified of what's coming up with Minister's Wife. But I think that's healthy. Mm-hmm. I suppose it's embracing the apprehension.
Yeah.
There are a few rules that I've, and thank you for the lovely things that you said. There are a few things that I've tried to put into place as we've gone through the commission process. One thing is to help get the playwright familiar with our players and our audience and our theater, the style of theater that we do, mm-hmm. the venue in which we produce, the kind of actors that we'd like to work with, the kind of material that we like to do. Because you don't want to commission something from a playwright that comes back to you so completely unsuitable for the kind of programming that you like to do.
So that's, it's a two-way street. You're
indeed.
Saying that the playwright has as much obligation to understand the theater that's commissioning and the actors right. you work with as the theater does to understand the writing of yeah. this playwright.
And indeed.
And that goes along with the choosing a writer that you know.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Again, and that they know the theater. Mm-hmm. When that doesn't happen, then there is a disconnect that creates a play that a theater paid for that there's nothing they can do with. And for a writer, it creates a situation where you really want to work on something and sometimes it just stalls out. And that's frustrating. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can shop that commission around and that's typically what happens. I think writers and Stradog Theater Company are the only two commissions I ever that were ever produced by the company that commissioned them.
Which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing in some ways. I'm just sort of realizing, because I've been thinking a lot about that since you said that. I sort of swelled with pride for a few minutes. And then I thought, you know what, I've got three, four commissions out right now. Am I going to be able to produce all four of them in the next 5 years? I think the responsibility and the obligation to the writer is, yes, in ideal circumstances, that play will end up on your stage.
Yeah.
But then I think you also have to take an obligation as an organization to support that work. If you're not going to be able to do it, to make sure you shop it around to a company that will be able to do it.
And the difference, too, is the workshopping process that is part of the Litter initiative that helped this play immensely. We were able for a year and a half now to work with five out of the six people that are in the cast. Mm-hmm. And with the same director, Bill Brown, and with Michael and the staff here. And that shows on stage that if a cast and a crew basically can hang onto a script and develop it for that amount of time, it's going to make a big, big impact.
And I think that's something that actually we should emphasize here is that Bill's participation in this process, because I think it's integral to the fact that it's been as successful and we've been as excited about it as we have. Mm-hmm. Bill is a primary architect of this theater company's ethos and mission. And in many ways, I feel that Bill understands our audiences even better than I do in terms of how he works with them and how he works with his shows in order to close the gap between audience and text. David Cromer once said in a WBEZ interview that the director's job is to take the play and the audience ever closer together throughout the process, mm-hmm. and then at the last minute get out of the way so that the two can meet, which I thought was a very, very brilliant and eloquent description of a director's job. Bill is intimately connected to how to make a play work for this audience. And I think for this play, which I think is challenging and risky and dangerous, he has found wonderful ways to invite the audience in. And it's been a treat, particularly over the last 2 weeks of previews. And we gave the play lots of extra previews so that it could breathe and enter into opening and into its run on very stable, secure grounds. It's been wonderful watching the audience lean into the play.
Mm. Well, it seems to me as a particular challenge as an artistic director to match a director and a playwright to an unwritten, match a director to an unwritten play.
In this situation, it was all fortuitous. A lot of things happen at Writers' Theatre. It's a matter of listening to the right signals when they come. And I'm not talking about any sort of mysterious
stars, no,
astrological. Or... Yeah, Nancy Reagan and I do not sit down to consult an astrologer every. It's a matter of listening to just the appropriate signals at the appropriate time. And when I was talking with Bill last year, just as we got into a point where we were very happy with the progress of Old Glory, but I wasn't quite sure how to help it get to the next step, and I knew it needed to get to another step, and I knew that I was absolutely not the right director for the project at that point. Bill picked up the phone to talk about the following season and said, you know, I really want to work on new plays. And that was just a
synchronicity.
It was a beautiful synchronicity. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't believe in accidents. Bill has a gift for finding sentiment where you least expect it. And Brett has a gift for removing sentiment where you most expect it. So it seemed to me the perfect combination because the two would challenge each other. And in fact, that's exactly what's happened.
Yeah.
I want to ask Brett more about what this has been, but there's something I just have to pursue.
Sure.
Why did you feel you were not the right director?
You just know sometimes. It's mm-hmm. it's sort of like the dating process. You don't necessarily know what your type is until you find yourself sitting across the table
right.
with them.
The image that I had in my mind is sometimes I'll say, oh, that's just such a lovely dress, but I would never wear it. Mm-hmm. And I really mean it. It's not that I don't like that dress. It's just it's not for me. Maybe that's a
well, then you're getting into a matter of taste. And I would say that this play is very much to my taste. So it's more a matter of chemistry, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And that's something...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think maybe that goes back to what you were saying, that maybe it's about being interested in bringing something together as opposed to going in yourself. Mm-hmm. That happens with me all the time if I'm introducing another playwright to a theater that maybe I haven't even worked with before, but I know that playwright would suit that theater mm-hmm. better, so I want to get those people together. And I think maybe that's exciting, actually. And then you go and you say, oh, I had a little something to do with that, and... That makes for exciting. Yeah, it makes for an exciting. And I mean, that's theater in itself is bringing people together.
Well, Brett, let's talk about how this development process has worked for you. You had a few breakfasts with Michael, yeah. and you had two pieces. It was going to be the third piece of a trilogy. Uh-huh. It was going to have perhaps a mystery element, although that was optional.
Right.
And now you have a play. So get us from A to
Z. That's the whole story. It was actually, there's one thing I can say, and I've already told Michael this, about this process is it was every step of the way done the way a writer wants it to be done. And that is meetings with notes. It starts very small. A suggestion of a director about the third meeting, I think it was. And asking me first who I would like to direct it. And then me sort of being a little flummoxed and Michael's like, well, let me think about some people.
Did you know Bill's work before?
I did know Bill's work. And the more I talked to Bill, the more people we know and the amount of time he's spent here, I'm sort of in awe of the guy. And then I came back, for the reading, and then I came back for a week-long workshop.
When was the first reading? How long into the process?
I think maybe it's been about a year ago.
It was a year ago, almost exactly a year ago.
Yeah.
How long had it taken you to get the script to that point?
Probably a year.
Okay.
Then we did a week-long workshop, maybe a few months after that, where the focus was just on the script. And well, it culminated with a public reading. But we spent all that time just asking questions and...
But at which point we had already decided, we committed to the play at the end of the first reading.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Before
yes,
even the workshop?
That's very true. Mm-hmm. And that also helps a lot, too.
Well, I wondered about that. Does it help or does it... In other words, there's a way in which the commitment that someone's going to do it has to be incredibly gratifying and
especially with a commission, yes.
Right. Right. But on the other hand, it's like... You know, this is on the season. It has to be done by a certain time, whether you find your way to the correct play or not in
well,
that time.
That's my job. Uh-huh. And when it comes down to it, that's my job. And if I didn't know that going in, I shouldn't have this job. And
on the other hand, I don't think we would have been excited about the project and committed to it if we didn't feel that what we had on the table was already
was
producible.
Enough.
So that the process of workshopping it and maybe coming to another draft. I mean, I don't think you expected to do another draft until after the workshop. You had a great conversation with Bill, and then the third draft that came back around this past October, I mean, was such an economized...
Yeah, I expected to do another draft after that, and Bill, he said something to me on the phone that you don't often get from theaters. Also, again, this being a wonderful place to work.
What did he say?
He said that he loved the draft, and that... never happens. It's usually, I read it and I have a few thoughts. Let's get together and talk. Or, I have a lot of questions. I don't know if this is really blah, blah, blah.
Both of which come into a playwright's ear as they hate it.
Or here we go again. There's more work to be done. I knew there was, and I knew there was on this play too, but, and he knew there was work to do. But the first thing he said was that he loved it. Uh-huh. And I tell that story to students and I tell that story to other writers also, because it's such a rare thing and it speaks so much to Bill and to this theater.
Go ahead.
Oh, and that's all I have to say.
Well, I wanted to take it as concrete as we can about the workshop process. You come in with a script at a certain level of development. You have at your disposal six actors, lucky you, and a week to work on it, lucky you. Mm-hmm. And now what happens on day one and day two and day four and day six?
We just start reading it and start asking questions. I ask questions of the actors. Bill asks a lot of questions of me and Michael too. And we hear it and we try scenes and we go over scenes again. And it's mostly about making sure the intention is clear and that we can track the stories as we go. And what it basically is when there is no workshop, it's those first 2 days of table work, as they call them, stretched out into a week where, you know, you get 6 to 8 hours to do that without a focus on what are the lights going to look like.
So the actors don't go up on their feet at all during that 6 days.
Table work is where a group of actors will sit around, the cast will sit around with the director, with the playwright, if the playwright is living, and ask questions about the script so that by the time the play gets up on its feet, there is some general sense of the emotional arc and the intellectual comprehension of that arc.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that everybody has a rough sketch of what their intentions are what their overall intentions are in order to craft staging.
And the great thing about a workshop is that the actors don't have to worry about what's my character going to be doing, because it's not the purpose is not there for them to be rehearsing. The purpose for the workshop is to improve the script. And so they are off the hook. And Bill, in a sense, is off the hook too. He doesn't have to worry about staging. He doesn't have to think, oh, where is this person going to be in this scene? It's all on me and the other folks who are developing the script.
Yes. Though, to be fair, I think you have to, part of your challenge is to find a balance between when an actor or a director comes to you and says a moment isn't working, the notion of your confidence saying, yes, this will work. This just needs time.
Yes. And I think that comes with experience, and it also comes with what you're listening for, going in with questions that you may have. And they're usually questions that you've had conversations with. I've conversations with Michael about or Bill about before we even go in, things that we're wondering about the script, whether things are certain things are working. And a lot of that for this specific script had to do with the mystery element of the play and where certain clues were and how to build it to that.
How different is the workshop process when you know that it's going to lead to a production at that company?
You know, no matter what Michael says, you never know. Mm-hmm. Until I am there on opening night, as it was last night, I don't, I don't take anything for granted. And so it's up and running now. I think that's...
You believe it now?
I believe it now. It's running.
So your answer is there's really no difference because you don't ever really believe it's going to happen?
Well, so. I think that's certainly a way to look at it. I believe it's going to happen. I believe it's going to happen, and I really believe it's going to happen when it opens.
Right.
But I am a little bit of a pessimist when it comes to, and I think all playwrights probably are. There's a lot of rejection in
the, so bruised
in this business.
And battered. You just
Yes, I think that's actually an industry-wide problem. Mm-hmm. It's funny, as I would say, most of the playwrights that I've come into contact with at most point during our conversations will tell me about some horror story, and I know that I've been on the negative end of a couple of those horror stories. Mm-hmm. It's a very, 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 very challenging business for everybody involved. It is particularly challenging for playwrights. I think for some reason...
Well, you're competing against a lot of greats like Shakespeare and Chekhov.
I often have that communication from audience members is, mm-hmm. why aren't you doing something that we know? I took a marketing program with the Arts and Business Council of Chicago at one point. And at that point in my development, I had always assumed that the world premiere was a good thing. But actually, world premiere to most audience members says untested, mm-hmm. unproven. Mm-hmm. I think there is a great difficulty, and this is not an attack on critics, this is just an observation, I think, on the critical process, that I think it is challenging for a critic on opening night, due to the nature of the art form, the collaborative nature of this art form, sometimes to tell the difference between a poor script and a poor production of a good script. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a matter of if only the critics were better. I think that's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
I think sometimes what evolves organically over the course of a rehearsal process makes it impossible for most outsiders to tell where the true fault of a production lies. But that means that somebody, a playwright, can spend 2 years slogging away on a script that gets sabotaged opening night, mm-hmm. By an unruly production. And then that script is effectively dead.
Right.
That is true.
Have you ever been tempted to pull a script?
No, actually. That's a good question. No, I haven't. There's been times where I've been very, very frustrated and angry and scared. Let me say, every time I'm frustrated, angry, and scared, from the smallest reasons to the biggest reasons. But I've never done that. And I think that's probably because I started as an actor and, you know, the show must go on. Mm-hmm. You go out on stage, whether you're, you know, dying or you're the greatest day ever of your life. And so I will always give the show the benefit of the doubt because I believe in the process so much. And I believe that those folks that are up on stage, at least one of them gets it. And, or somebody backstage, at least one of them gets it. And somebody in the audience, at least one person out there is going to get it, going to see through that stuff if there are problems. Mm-hmm. And those folks, they deserve to work on something.
That's interesting. That because it's, I mean, it's one of the reasons why I think this organization has put so much effort and energy into the process of making art. I think, it's not that most theaters don't put all their energy into the process of making art, but I think, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the pretty trees outside our theater, but our process is focused towards making sure that every artist who comes into the room is given the greatest potential to succeed, and stress is removed from their environment in order to give them the foundation and support that they need in order to take risks.
The result of which is that the product is the best it could be. And I mean, ironically, you could say, because you've focused entirely on the process.
The company, you know, it's funny. You could call us the process theater in a way. It's mm-hmm. It's a very difficult thing to explain to funders, to sometimes to board members. We're working very hard to rewrite our mission statement right now, because I think the success of the theater company has been about the effort that we put on our process. But that's a very, very difficult thing to put into words. Mm-hmm. I had this is a very sentimental story, but when I was in my early days, after I returned from the Stratford Festival, one of the ways that I made money was I was a trained masseur. And when Roberta Maxwell and Julie Harris came into town with Peter Schaffer's, what's the name of the play?
I don't know.
The terrorism in the little country village. Letters and Lovage. When Roberta Maxwell and Julie Harris came into town with Peter Schaffer's Letters and Lovage, Roberta Maxwell, who was an actress at the Stratford Festival who I had done some work with, said that Julie Harris was looking for a masseur, and would I come over and be her masseur? So I came to her hotel room and gave her 3 massages. It's one of the most fantastic experiences of my life as this 10-time Tony Award-winning actress. And she told me a story at one point. She said, "Do you like the circus?" And I don't like the circus, as it happens, but it's Julie Harris, so I told her that I did like the circus. And she said, "Well, I love the circus. I remember going once and seeing these little dogs, and the trainer was having them running around in circles and doing all sorts of tricks and standing on their hind leg. And finally, at the climax of the act, the ringmaster got a ladder. The little dog came up to the top of the ladder and jumped off into the ringmaster's arms." She said, "That's what I think acting is like." And I, you know, as sort of now we're all reaching for our airplane bags, because of the saccharine nature of that anecdote. But I have to say, I have never forgotten that anecdote as something actors have to feel like they can take a leap.
They're going to get caught
blindly. All artists have to feel like they can take a leap blindly, and there is someone ready to catch them should they fall.
Right. That's somebody trustworthy.
Yes.
That will catch them as they fall.
No. Well, oh, God, sorry, it was on my cell phone.
Exactly.
Ooh, that looks painful. You're right.
That is very true.
Well, it's very tricky, it seems to me, in the development of a new play, because when you put on a received script, the actors and the directors know it's their job to solve any problems. They're not going to go to the playwright and say, you know, fix this. They're saying, "Oh, well, we're not getting something, or we've got to get something."
No, that's my problem. That's not their problem. It's my problem if something's not working. And if we have a cast and a director, as we do in this show, experienced people that can, you know, solve problems. If there are problems, they will try to make things work. And so I have to sit there and I have to make sure that I understand if something's not working and how to fix it. We have a joke in rehearsal that everybody's going to assume that if there's a problem, it's 90% their fault. And because I'm always saying that, let me do something first. And take a look at it. And I can usually find out what it is. If there's something tripping the actors up or something tripping a scene up, it is usually my fault, because it is a new play. It's not.
But not always. Tested.
But not always. There's a 10% that's not.
I'd say it's more than, you know, I think Bill would
say more like 12.
I do not. I'm going to put words in Bill's mouth, but I think he might challenge you on that.
He does. They all do. They all say, "No, it's 90% my fault." And then when the actors say,
I think the truth is it's usually somewhere in the middle. And I think if you've got a good process, you will be able to discover ultimately who it is, because you will try.
What if it's a changeable process that it's 90% at the beginning of the rehearsal period, and as we go, it becomes less my fault and more theirs. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm assuming.
Sure.
By the time we get to the, you know, previews, it's 10% my fault. Yeah.
How much has it been rewritten since the workshop?
Probably some folks would say not much, and I would say a lot. Mm-hmm. just because my scripts tend to be kind of spare
and precise.
And so, you know, me changing
a word
or two pages or adding a monologue or whatever is a big deal to me.
I think you overhauled 50% of your script. I think it's gone through a considerable rewrite.
Probably.
I mean, you really did a lot of very, very, I noticed a lot of very, very significant but subtle changes that made a huge difference when they started coming out of the mouths of the actors.
And that's pretty typical.
Has it changed structurally?
No, it hasn't changed structurally. No. And I usually start with structure when I'm working on a play, and that doesn't usually change ever. Because I'm so specific about my structure. If I don't have the structure, I can't write the play if I don't know what that structure is. And, we had I had some thoughts toward the end of rehearsal period that I had maybe not gotten the structure right, but Bill said, no, we've got it here. And, so the things that changed were specificity and, words.
And how much seeing it on a particular actor, once you have your actual cast, does that affect your process?
Quite a bit.
Because you have a terrific cast.
Because of what they bring. I mean, I want it to be collaborative that way. I start hearing their voice and I know what they're capable of, and I want to push what they're capable of. If I see something that I'm very interested in that they're doing, I'll often latch on to that. And a good example is Steve Haggard. The things he was bringing to his character Goss, I wanted to push that sort of this brutality that he was bringing to the character, fun brutality and a cruel sort of nature. He seemed like he was really sinking his teeth into that. And I said, well, I think I can probably help with that in some ways that will help the play. And knowing that he would run with it, and actually all the actors knowing that they would run with it, this is, like you just said, this is an amazing group of folks who in the Chicago theater scene would call them gamers. We'd call them all gamers, and they really, really are.
Which means what?
Which means that they will do what it takes to make that emotion, they'll go there basically emotionally, and will throw themselves on the floor, and they will lose their minds on stage if that's what it takes. And that's doesn't happen in too many cities where you can allow for that and sort of wonder from it.
I could not agree more. I think it's one of the wonderful things about it. It is the wonderful thing, the essential, wonderful core thing about this city's actors.
Yeah.
I suppose it would make sense to say this in some ways emanated from all the early risks at the Steppenwolf Theatre Company.
Sure.
I mean, that the core element of John Malkovich.
And story theater, too. And the need,
Northwestern.
Yeah, need to bring that, what's inside, out to make that emotional connection with people that don't necessarily want to be emotionally connected with theater. Mm-hmm. It was bringing the emotion to them.
I've always said I thought Steppenwolf stood at the core of the Chicago theater experience as an ensemble. It makes like the culture an enormous ensemble. And the actors, they do. There's no sense of actors ever gravitating their way down center to grandstand in order to make sure that they get the opening night review or the Jeff Award, which sometimes happens in New York. Mm-hmm. There's an experience where you can spend the first week or so of rehearsal wrestling the actors from showcasing themselves.
And the great thing too in this show is that they would challenge each other so much, and that helped me again work on the script. Is that, you know, if one of them was going for it, then if another actor didn't do that, then the scenes weren't working, and so everybody really had to step up as the play goes on.
The highest common denominator.
Yeah, they've all got to step up into each other's emotional state, and they really are. They're evenly matched. It's pretty incredible. They're all evenly matched.
Talk about the scene, which to me was one of the highlights, which is something that in a way you didn't much write, I would say, which is when two of the characters get drunk and high, probably, and sing together. And probably for me, that was one of the highlights of of the performance. And it was exactly that quality of just going all the way out there. So how do you, as a playwright who, you know, you're conceiving of this scene, you haven't yet seen these actors do it. What was it before they came into the process?
Well, you hope for the best, for one thing, that you're going to get some folks who can do it. Research mostly of soldiers in Iraq singing and dancing. Mm-hmm. And
that YouTube video that you have on
YouTube videos and stories and also just knowing how 21, 22 year olds act. And I was again hoping that it would work. And that's all I can ever do is hope that what I've built will lead to a choice that helps the play and makes that scene work. And, you know, having those two actors, Marcus and Steve, there to do it makes it work. Also, Bill Brown telling Steve, keep singing it, because it used to be he would just do it once and then we move on with the scene. He'd say, no, three times, six times, keep singing it until we found the right balance. And then we went back and sort of pared it down. But
so that was very empirically developed then. It wasn't that you had kind of choreographed in your mind before you go in.
Oh, no. As far as the specific dance goes, it is different every night.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Every night it's completely, completely different. Even the words sometimes are different.
But I would also, again, challenge the notion that the playwright didn't write that. I would say that the playwright in this case, is because we have such a specific playwright, provided the structure within which then he has given the actor, here is an opportunity now for you to explode.
Then, and that's the hope again, that when I write that scene, that there's a moment that needs a release for the audience and for these actors, and that the actor will feel what that release is and that they'll take it and run with it and then do what comes next.
And which is one of the things that, again, that makes Haggard such an inspiring choice for that role. I mean, and Steve was saying last night, he doesn't feel that this is a role that he gets the opportunity to play very often or cast in very often. And yet, of course, he takes to it like a duck to water.
No, it is an extraordinary performance. For me, that was another highlight of last night, was that performance. So, well, we're out of time, but I want to thank you both for coming and talking about what was obviously a very happy collaboration.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of February 16th, 2009. Northlight Theater is preparing for the Chicago premiere of Mauritius by Teresa Rabeck and directed by Rick Snyder. The production will start its run on February 25th at the Northlight Theater in Skokie. The stakes are high when half-sisters inherit a book of rare stamps that may include the crown jewel of the stamp-collecting world. The battle for possession takes a dangerous turn when rival stamp collectors arrive, willing to go to any lengths to get that find. Named one of Time Magazine's top 10 plays of 2007, Mauritius is a sharp comedy and heart-pounding drama that combines the best aspects of both Hitchcock and Mamet. Tickets for Mauritius are currently available. For information, follow the links at theaterinchicago.com. A Bronx Tale, written by and starring Chaz Palminteri, will be making a stop here in Chicago at the Oriental Theater for a limited engagement March 10th through the 22nd. This funny and touching memoir about a young man's experiences growing up in the Bronx during the 1960s, actor Chaz Palminteri returns to the stage in an unforgettable performance, bringing a total of 18 characters to life. Palminteri has been in movies such as The Usual Suspects, Bullets Over Broadway, and Analyze This. Tickets are currently on sale for A Bronx Tale, running from March 10th through the 22nd. Find out how to get them at theaterinchicago.com. Some of the shows coming later this season are being sacrificed in these financially risky times. American Theater Company has delayed plans for their spring musical, Yeast Nation. It is now set to run next fall. In its place will be Hedwig and the Angry Inch. The additional time will be used to focus on more work on Yeast Nation, according to ATC Artistic Director PJ Paparelli. The House Theater of Chicago has canceled their spring production of Allen Infinitum to devote more resources to The Rose and the Rhyme, opening this February 22nd at the Chopin Theater. According to artistic director Nathan Allen, season members will be able to use the fall production as the third show in their season subscription. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Michael Halberstam and Brett Nevue for giving us the honor of interviewing them this week. I would also like to thank Ann Nicholson Weber and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we will be here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I am your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.